welcome to Rift Happens Season 2, Episode 11. I am Justin, joined by my co-host to my left, I believe, over there, Lucas. Lucas, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Always fun to be here. Sad I missed last week, but always fun to be back.
You're good. Welcome back. And then we're also joined by a special, very, very special guest today. We have Lumen Vera joining us from Loyola University. Lumen has a wide range of esports experience. He's competed in the industry for over 20 years, has served as CEO of Crescent Esports since 2016, while gaining experience as a head coach and tournament director for various esports teams and organizations. And like I said, currently serving as the, what's your title at Loyola?
It's head esports coach, but I run the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's basically you're your own athletic director, basically.
Don't tell mine that.
I mean, it really is. You know, as we talk to high school esports directors, collegiate directors, and all that stuff, it really, you know, that the whole head coach title in itself is kind of a misnomer at times. Yeah. with all the weight and how much you're really responsible for. You really are kind of a mini athletic director.
And I think we'll kind of go a little more into it, but I think people, the title that gets put on it, I mean, esports is new, especially in this area of the country. And so no one particularly knows what it actually is until you start doing it. And so this is the road that all of us have been on as coaches.
I remember seeing a Twitter thread. This was, gosh, probably about a year ago. And someone had got on a soapbox and was talking about nobody should be, you know, you shouldn't be giving your esports director or head coach this title or this name. Like, listen, everybody's still trying to figure this out. I think we can pump the brakes a little bit and give a little bit of grace.
Yeah, the funny thing is that when we made Crescent, when we started my business, we thought like, oh, what are we going to name stuff? And we kind of like looked at all the names and looked at what everybody was doing and kind of realized name doesn't really matter.
Right.
You can name it whatever you want. As you just, here's the job description. This, like, here, I'm a banana maker. That's what we do.
Cool. Well, before we get into talking about Loyola, and I really wanted you to come on and really talk about your program there and kind of drum up some interest, you know, a way for you to kind of pitch that, and then we kind of pick your brain as far as, you know, collegiate esports, because we have our primary audience is high school or even middle school scholastic esports coaches. So I think it'd be great to bring on some college programs and let them talk about, you know, what they're doing and even answer some questions there. But before we do, I did want to have a little bit of fun. You mentioned in the CR Discord that you play Dota. So we're going to start off with this question. Which is the better MOBA, League of Legends or Dota? And the follow-up question is, why is it League of Legends?
It's not League of Legends. let me look at this. Let me give you two lenses here. The lens of, look, I started in Dota 1, and then moved to Dota 2, and then played Heroes of New Earth for a little while. Mm. So I ran the gambit. And then League came out. But every time I played League, I was like, it just makes me want to play Dota. And every time I'm like, wait, I can't creep. I can't block creeps. I can't creep deny. I can't control the flow of what I'm used to, so I'm like, it just makes me miss Dota. Though, if I look at it objectively, League of Legends is much more of a streamlined game. Mm-hmm. However, I very much enjoy the complexity, the extra complexity, all the other awareness things that I have to pay attention to, the secret shops, the creep management, what jungle actually does. I have to pull creeps, I got to stack creeps, I got to, you know, run the economy a little better in Dota. Also, visually, Dota looks better to me than that.
Mm. Really?
Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's pretty common. It's just a preference, right? Like League of Legends is brighter, but like very cartoony. Dota looks a lot more like some of the more modern games that we're playing. Yeah, so
it's more like gritty, real. Yeah. It fits more of that WoW aesthetic that I grew up with. I'm like, yeah.
I always think I'm playing Diablo when I fire up Dota. I'm like, this is what it looks like to me.
So for any of our listeners that do not know, we'll give you a little history lesson about the kind of the origins of League of Legends. The creators, originally it was a mod for Warcraft 3, Defense of the Ancients, where you have Dota. And then, if I recall correctly, the creators of the mod were hired by Riot Games mm-hmm. in order to create League of Legends. And then what we have now as far as Dota 2 is just basically the successor for Dota in the standalone product, as opposed to it being a Warcraft 3 mod. So League of Legends does have has its roots in Dota, but you mentioned some of the really cool mechanics that are there in Dota that are not present in League of Legends, like creep denial. You can attack your own minions, yep. essentially, right? And deny that from the opponent.
You can control how your opponent operates, like in the very beginning. So early game is, there's a lot more complexity than just like, okay, hey, all I got to worry about is your minion wave and you. The other one is, I got to worry about that. I got to worry about mine. I got to worry about you and myself and my positioning. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more awareness. I do think that being the case, that if you are good at Dota 2 or you learn more MOBAs because of so many things of information you got to take in, you can transfer those skills to elsewhere, because when you jump into a different game, you're like, oh, I don't have to pay attention as much. Mm-hmm. This is much easier. My brain can work in this area. But I think as far as the mods, I was trying to think about that. Ice Frog is the one that made the first one. And then he was also, Valve hired him to put on Dota 2 since it's his, since it was their game. Mm-hmm. And then I think some of the people I'm not sure how many people worked on the original, but I want to say a lot of it might have been from other MOBAs, but yeah, they definitely pulled into Riot a lot of the creators to make League of Legends and also just to streamline it, which they kind of did also with, I mean, it's similar to how Valorant is too in comparison to, well, maybe I wouldn't make that comparison. Valorant, there's a lot more complexity than CSGO. Wait a second. The economy's different. I would say this, the economy's very different. Mm-hmm. But yeah. That's a whole dissecting discussion of just like game mechanics and what to go down there.
Go ahead, Lucas.
No, you're good. I can't tell you too much about Dota because as a longtime League of Legends player, the one time I tried to fire up Dota to play with a friend in college, I alt F4'd and never looked back when I realized that my character did not turn around immediately when I clicked.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, because
that was the out of everything in the game, that was the most jarring to me. I was like, you're telling me I can't just click and move immediately backwards? I have to waste time rotating. This game is terrible. I'm done.
Really? I've never noticed that.
Yeah,
like maybe it's something they fix later. Now I don't even pay attention to that. Like that's just it goes behind.
I remember that being one of the major core mechanical differences between playing League of Legends and Dota. Is League of Legends has an instant turn whenever you click the opposite way, so dodging skill shots is pretty straightforward. But with Dota, you have to calculate the fact that your whole character model has to rotate around in order for you to move in the opposite direction. So to me, it almost makes it feel slower, I guess.
Well, Dota is definitely slower, for sure. It can be. Their games can last average. I think on average, they last longer. But I will say, not sponsored by Valve or Dota, but there is a new player mode, which actually is much easier to explain when you go into it, because it goes quicker. You're actually playing with brand new players, and you play it, you know, it's much easier to explain. You get a lot of core heroes that you don't need to worry about. The thing that I very much like about Dota versus League, though, I can play everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't gotta play this farming game, whatever. You know, I get everybody there.
Yeah, everything's unlocked straight from the get-go. What are their microtransactions then?
So they don't have any. So Valve, the community makes these skins. So you can get skins on there that are like less than $1, and some of them look super cool. Some of them are also overly expensive. Some of them are like $500 for I don't know why. But the skins there are because Steam has their workshop. So people have been able to make their own skins just like they do in Counter-Strike, where you make skins on the guns and stuff. So the community has created their own economy. And in that, the way that it works is the more you buy skins, I think half the money, at least a percentage of the money, goes to the Dota 2 International. So that, right. And so, I mean, that's how you have, what, $24, $40 million?
Yeah, I was going to say, their esports scene, they do give away a lot more money, I would say. I think on average, when you compare their international tournaments throughout the years. They've given away more money than Riot has, if I remember correctly.
I will say I'm not at, like, I used to be this way because someone kind of said it in chat, and that's how I used to be. So I used to very much be more like, like League. I don't like League anymore. I mean, it's not, it's just different. It's just a different thing to get used to. There's, again, less things I got to worry about. There's a talent tree now, which, you know, well, it was always been there, but to me, I'm like, oh, that's something I didn't really think about. There's just different stuff to worry about. That's all. But, you know, the kind of the proof is in the pudding there. Like, that's why it has such a big scene. It's one, it has a lot of support from the community. It has a lot of support from the developer. Dota has a lot of support from the community and some support from Valve, because Valve is more hands off. Mm-hmm. Except for when it comes to TI.
Well, I think we can, I guess we'll just say we agree. It comes down to personal preference. As you said, there are a lot of diehard fans either way.
Thinking about Dota in the back of my mind.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into some really cool conversations here. We'll let you talk a little bit about Loyola and you know, kind of pitch that to our coaches here, and maybe you know, this will give them. The idea is give them another avenue, right? Another resource for their students that may be graduating, or even juniors or sophomores that are already starting to explore that realm. So can you go and give us like an overview of Loyola University out of New Orleans?
Sure. So like you said, yeah, Loyola University New Orleans is based out of New Orleans. There are a few others off the top of my head. I don't know them. but it's a Jesuit school, private school. It's a beautiful campus. I went to San Diego State, so San Diego State has a bigger campus. But to me, this seems like a very nice campus to just sit around and be. There's always a lot of stuff going on because it's a musical campus. There's a huge music program. So when you walk around, people are playing music, doing art. There's concerts going on. The student life is active. So if you're looking for a university that has stuff to do, this is the place to go. And as far as the size of it, it's not crazy huge. I think it's like maybe like 5,000 students, half of that being graduate, half of that being undergraduate. Some of the more popular academics are computer science, music, business. We just launched, I believe, a new nursing program. And you're going into a city that's known for its food. And it's so here's the thing. And like the food at Loyola is actually surprisingly really good. They have their, you know, general like Subway and their little like food court, but they have this buffet. And for students, there's a meal plan. I think for staff, if you get like a discount, nonetheless, it's like what, like a few, like 10, 12 bucks, but like, it's delicious. It's really, really good. It actually has like a large, wide variety of different foods, healthy, less healthy, but like, I was kind of blown away by it, because I was like, yeah, okay, this is like school food. I've had school food. I know school food. But I was like, oh wait, this is actually legit. Okay, cool. I want this. But the campus and the school and everything, you know, to me, it does feel like an actual school and like group in a community that actually cares about the people that are involved in it. And I'll, you know, kind of be more transparent about this. It's why I actually accepted the position here. For me, when they brought me in for the esports program, my big thing, and I'm kind of jumping ahead on a question here, and I'll touch base and I'll quickly go over there real quick and then come back. But for my big thing, when it comes to esports within the scholastic space, colleges, high schools, a lot of people are kind of iffy with how it runs, and to put it plainly, a lot of people don't know what they're doing. And, you know, not to say that I'm this crazy expert at all, like there's still things I'm learning as well, but esports is a community. That's really what it comes down to. We're people that just came together to play games. That's how leagues started. That's how competition started. It's just a couple of people that came together and were like, yeah, let's see if I'm better than you. You know, we go back to the days of the arcades. Those were the turfs. That's where how it ran. And you created those communities, you made those people. And it's kind of, that gets lost when you're doing it for a bigger entity. However, when I was talking to the athletic department, when I was talking to the people at Loyola, the way they spoke about their students was caring. They very much care about the students. They want them to succeed, and they put a lot to make sure that they do. The school itself has a really great student success program outside for the academic side, so that if students are having issues, they can go to a counselor, talk to them, have a roadmap worked on, and they can slowly build from there. The coaches themselves work with the teachers as well for the academics to make sure that the students are balancing their life. When I'm talking to students, I always tell them the joke of like, hey, you're going to have academics competition in your social life. You got to balance three things, but choose two. And so, that was the selling point for me of like, okay, this is a people I can actually work with that actually want to make sure their students are cohesive. The teams work together, they build off each other, and that everyone is succeeding. As far as, you know, what we offer here, the program is brand new. You know, I started in December. They've been talking about doing it for a while, but essentially think about it as like it started when I came in. Our program is fully going to be starting in the fall. We've already ordered parts for computers. We have 20 PCs and a couple other setups. And as far as games, if there's competition, that's the game I'm going for. Right now, if I were to really narrow down what I'm highlighting for, it would probably be Overwatch, Valorant, Smash, Rocket League. Those would be like those major four. But I would definitely want to go. I definitely want CS:GO, Rainbow Six, Fortnite, Halo, Apex. The thing is, and this has been my outlook on it, is if I can, I don't want a student to come to my program, pay the tuition, and then not do anything. Mm-hmm. So if there's competition, if there's something for them to do, then that's what I'm going to have them do. Now, despite the program being new, the benefit of the whole thing is that, you know, you have my experience. I've been in this for a very long time. I started off as a competitor. I moved up from a competitor to content creation and Twitch streaming. And then I moved a little towards tournament directing because I would run small tournaments with friends. And then my friend started a business of his own. I was a tournament director for there, casted, commentated, organized everything. And then when we started Crescent Esports, I was doing everything. I had to manage people. I had to create content. I had to do social media. And I learned a lot from it. I made a lot of connections, met a lot of people, and took on a lot of different skills. And so my value is very holistic. My outlook is very holistic on things. And so because of that, I want to spread that to the students. I want to make sure that they have connections that they can make. I can introduce them to people. If they want to become a pro player, I tell them, I talk to them about burnout. I talk to them about the struggles they're going to go through. I talk to them and say, hey, you can meet this pro player as well. You can meet this player who's currently undergoing this whole thing and talk to them and see what that's like. Because there's a lot that goes into esports. There's a lot to go into the pro scene that a lot of people don't see. You get this story, especially you get a lot of that nitty gritty gets skipped over for the story. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you get the main thing of like, oh, they came from nothing and became a pro player, but there's a lot, you know, there's a lot you have to deal with. There's a lot of mentality that you have to have. And as an individual, you have to be pretty well-rounded. So that's why I take this approach. As to why, whenever they go pro, if they tell me, hey, coach, I want to go pro, I'm going to say, cool, that's what I'll focus you on. However, you're also going to touch doing social media. You're also going to learn how to brand manage. You're also going to learn how to coach. You're also going to learn how to cast, how to do tournament directing, because at some point you're going to have to know how this works so that when you're on stage, on the big stage for FaZe or whichever organization you're trying to get into, you understand what's in front of you. And working in the pro space, it's frustrating to see high level players shut down because, you know, they didn't set the right expectations. They didn't get told, they didn't get that support. So the short end of it is that what I offer and the best part of it is the major support factor, that you're going to get the support that you need to get to where you want to go. If you want to do tournament directing, even if you don't want to do esports, there's a lot of work, a workforce experience that you can get, a lot of hands-on experience that you're going to get, because that's what esports does. It's a social, it's just a vehicle. Competition, I would say, is like 15% of it. Most of it is you're doing other stuff. You're going to have to learn the business side of things. You're going to learn how to do social. You're going to have to do management. And so this whole thing that gets kind of put under the rug that a lot of parents and even I would say an older generation looks at like, oh, you want to play video games the rest of your life? And it's like, no, that's part of it. Here's what you're actually doing. And when I talk to parents and even, you know, to when I'm preaching to the choir, people are like, yeah, there's a lot of things I learned as playing in esports that I didn't think was important. Like, just to give an example, building computers. Mm-hmm. It's the reason I know how to do it, because I was like, how do I get more bang for my buck? How do I make sure that I'm paying for what I need? How do I know what parts to fix when something goes wrong without having to just buy a new computer? And I know, you know, for the majority of the audience here who are high school coaches, that's maybe a lot of you being like, well, yeah, duh. That's exactly what we try to tell our deans, our everyone above us. So we try to tell the parents. And the other, you know, aside from that support, we do offer scholarships. They usually range, the average is usually between like 20 to 30,000. And they can just go up from there. It's on two major factors. One is academics, and the other is competitive. So basically, for me, I want to make sure that students can keep a 3.0. And if that goes under, that's not too much of a problem. As in, like, all of a sudden, the scholarship's going to get pulled from underneath. But what it is that that's a conversation that I say, hey, what's going on? What can I do for you to help you? What can Loyola do for you to help you? Do you need to be benched? Do you need to be take time? Because again, that's that burnout conversation. And I think that's for sure a conversation that I would say for coaches, high school, college, anyone needs to understand that burnout is a real thing. And you, all of us have had it in the various things that we've done. But it's difficult to be okay with when students are wanting to compete, when you're wanting to go pro, especially because there's mentality that gets taught around in just the public scene of, oh, you want to grind, you got to grind 24/7 if you want to make it pro. And it's like, no, you don't. Don't do that. Get out of that mentality. Stop that. if you want to do that, you're going to go nowhere. Time does not equal success. Be intentful on what you're doing, what you're working on. And if you're going to burn out, it's fine. Talk to your coaches. Talk about that. You know, for coaches, talk to your students about that. Say burnout is a real thing. It's going to happen, and that's okay. As far as, you know, kind of transferring over to like what I look for with students, the ideal feeling I want to give when Loyola walks into an arena is like, oh, okay, crap. Like,
oh, it's them. They're here.
But yeah, I want that. That's what I want. I want my students to be that good. Now, I'm not expecting the best of the best. Because even in this space, it's still new. I know there are a few high school students and a few high school coaches that have been like bragging about their students. So for sure, like, I know within the scene that there are some like top-notch talent. But for me, the biggest thing I look for is compatibility. Can I actually coach you? Would you accept coaching? I'd rather have someone of a lower caliber skill that is willing to work on themselves and take critique and take that information versus somebody who is, well, I already know what I'm doing. I'm better than everybody. I know what I'm doing. Da 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 da. I've done that already. I've dealt with those kinds of people, and it's seeing where they're at now, they just flop. Like, that's it. And the thing with esports is that despite it being a very global thing, your name travels quick. People talk in esports. It's social media ran. Everything's a fishbowl. If you are having, there's an, to give an example, I'm not going to give their username, but There was somebody that I coached, top 500 Grandmaster, made it number one in Overwatch, and their name traveled, all because their attitude was very negative. Everyone knew of them, and they would say, yeah, you're good, but you got a crap attitude. And no one wanted them. No pro organization wanted them, because that's just too much that's just too much hassle to deal with. That is something that needs to get hit on. Is if you really want to be part of this, you have to understand that this is bigger than you, and it's always going to be bigger than you. And for you to make a ripple in the ocean of esports, you got to step above a lot of people, not only skill wise, but attitude. Like, you have to really shine and be able to pull people together. That's why numbers matter in social media. That's why social media is such a big thing. That's why Twitch streaming is such a big thing. Because if you can build a community off of your own personality, if you can build a brand and a reputation that people really, really want to be with, then any org is going to look at you and be like, money. That's money right there. That's who I want, because they represent a really good opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna interject for a little bit. They, you know, we see that too with even the pro teams when they build, or pro organizations when they build teams. There are often times where they're going to bring in players just for the branding. You know, they don't even have necessarily the top numbers. Obviously, they're really good players, but they know when they're bringing in that pro player, they're bringing in that pro player's fan base as well. I've made mention this on the podcast before, but one of the things that my wife says as far as like when she's doing like hiring and stuff is kind of exactly what you said. Like, I can teach you how to do some of the things that this job requires of you. So I'm not necessarily looking for somebody that's going to come in and automatically know how to do the job, but I can't teach you character. So if you've already got character, that's great. I can teach you the other stuff. So she's really looking for people who are coachable, who are willing to learn, who are, you know, malleable and things of that nature. And esports really is no different. Lucas, I know you had something.
Yeah, so I just wanted to kind of ask a follow-up question to that. So, you know, you talk about how specifically with your team, you want to bring in players who aren't just good, but are willing to put in the extra work outside of that to become essentially, a household name, right? Like, you want, if they want to become a pro, then you're going to help them on that path. So I know, talking to some of these other, some of the college esports directors that I know, that is something that they have had to think a lot about, right? How are they going to broach the kind of the very volatile nature of college esports? If you have a kid come in as a freshman and they pop off their fall semester, and now they're getting offers to go to different pro teams, how are you going to deal with that? Are you, what is your plan for that?
So I'm lucky in that, because I've been in that. That's the short answer to that is, like, you got to learn how to be a lawyer at that point. Being in that, going into that, if I ever get into this situation, which I'm sure I will, that one of my players is going to be scouted. That's one, a conversation with them of like, what do you actually want to do? You know, do you really want to do this? You realize the expectation is going to be different. Cause I, for me, with my team, I'm going to try to set a similar expectation to what is in the pro scene. Because that's the whole point of college. We're just trying to build you up for the real world. So with that being the case, you know, it is looking at like, hey, okay, so, you know, X organization gave you this contract. What does it actually say? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? What are you playing for? What hours are you putting in? Do you want to finish school? Do you just want to jump into this? And then you slightly got to also think ahead of, okay, how long is this contract? Is it a year? Cool. What happens in a year? Are you going to stick around? We don't know what's going to happen. So short answer, learn to be a lawyer. There's a lot of questions you got to ask. Mm-hmm. Long answer is there's a huge discussion to be made. And here the expectation, you're right. It is a very volatile situation. It's not, I guess it, to give a comparison to traditional sports, it's like, hey, you get signed on as a player and then maybe you just stay benched the whole time. And then mm-hmm. there you go. You're not there anymore. Like, so while you, if that happens, that's just kind of learning that scene. I would say for college coaches and even high school coaches, go to step into the scene a little, like look at how organizations are doing what they're doing. Look up the esports news of what's going on in the global landscape, because that's what the students are going to run into. You know, these are the things you're going to have to know. Is Cloud9 trying to build a team? Is this new game going to be this new esport? Does this game actually have a competition? Just to give examples, like when Valorant came out, it was Riot made. So just as players and people coming into it, knowing the success of League of Legends, there was a very strong trust in that, okay, Valorant's going to be an esport that's going to be mm-hmm. pretty solid. Riot is pretty hands-on with how they run things. Riot pretty much gave a roadmap. They've allowed the community to prosper and build their own thing. And then slowly now Riot is coming back in with their hands on. I know they just released their college Valorant League. Mm-hmm. So that's them coming back with the hands on and be like, all right, guys, we let you do it. Our turn. Using Apex as an example, Apex was amazing when it came out. Apex Legends looked great, felt great. Boom, everybody jumped in on it. Three, 4 months in, nothing. There was no mm-hmm. competition. There were no lobbies. There was no way to do real competition. They had to make up some weird rules of using the public. Mm-hmm. Like an example of this is you couldn't use a new account because that would mess with your MMR, thus meaning that you would get easier lobbies, thus meaning that you would have an easier time and your points would be higher. So you had to use the account that you signed on. Your account had to be a certain amount of time there. But even now, I know Apex came out with they have a circuit, but there's also, to be honest, there's not much there mm-hmm. as far as like competition. There is for content creation, sure. But being a pro Apex player has a very different meaning than being a pro Valorant player. So that's the long answer to that of like, you know, what do you do in this situation? You got to know the scene. You got to know the lay of the land of what's going on here. You know, Kat's got to follow up. Yeah.
And you know, it's really tough too if you're in that situation as the director and you have a student that's going to come to you. As Lucas said, the scenario freshman year, you know, this kid still has 3 years of school left. And there's this opportunity to go and make money mm-hmm. as opposed to staying in school and losing money. Paying money. I'll say paying money, you know, that's a tough sell because, you know, as adults on the outside, you know, we're looking at it, you know, kind of big picture and okay, you need a fallback plan and you need to make sure that you do your research, do your due diligence and look at everything. Before you make this, you know, take this plunge. But then at the same time, it's hard to argue. Just leave the money. That's not really important, you know, because at the end of the day, college is not yet the path to professional esports.
Right.
Like we see in other traditional sports. Right. We do prepare them and you touched on it earlier and I thought it was really great. All of the different ways that you can get involved in esports. Yes, esports would not exist without the competition. At its root, we have to have the competition, as you said, you know, about 15% of it. So mm-hmm. yes, we have to have the competitive aspect and the game playing in order for it to exist, but we have to have everything else in order for people to even care about it or even notice right. it. You know, you've got to have the production, you've got to have the social media, you've got to have the brand management, all of these things. And you know, it's when we're in these collegiate programs, or bringing students into the collegiate programs, it And that way it is kind of a path to pro. It's not necessarily you have to come play for me in order to get looks from major organizations. It's you're going to come here and you're going to get those skills to be successful within that industry. And with the way esports is now, I would love to see some data on how many people are actually in esports full time versus how many people are in esports like freelance or part time. That would be an interesting statistic, because I would bet that you have more people not drawing money participating in esports or participating in it as a side gig. And that's really how a lot of people get started, is just that volunteer work and getting their foot in the door part time, trying to help make a tournament, you know, work.
You said something earlier and I want to hit on it a little more, is that the amount of time, the thing, like, you, and I tell this to the students that I'm talking to, and I've told this to the students, you know, who are looking into esports. Do you need college for esports? No. However, you are setting yourself back, because now you're doing everything on your own. You have to build, you got to learn how to build that brand. You got to learn how to build that TikTok, that Instagram, that Twitter, that Facebook, that what other social media are out there.
Twitch, MySpace.
YouTube, MySpace.
MySpace.
Zanga, you got to bring out those. A lot of people coming into esports, like players coming into this, don't realize that. And so that's kind of the thing I tell them, like, look, yes, can you do this by yourself? Do you need to come to Loyola? Do you need to go anywhere else? No, you don't. However, you are really setting yourself up for failure by not taking the chance to go to an institution that is a place for the next 4 years for you to make a network, for you to make those connections, for you to make those business relationships. And I'm speaking from this from experience. I don't remember a lot of things that I learned from SDSU, but I sure can tell you where the best napping spots are. Like, looking back in hindsight, I'm looking at myself and be like, great, I have a degree. My degree is in anthropology with a specification in archaeology. Nowhere near where am I at now because of that. Like, the paper got me a few jobs, but that's it. Nonetheless, like, looking back, I'm like, oh crap. There were people that I knew that went to SDSU that I've met now that I'm like, oh man, like, they went around the same time I did. Imagine if I networked them then and built these relationships and stuff like that. And it didn't dawn on me. That's the beauty of what the university and colleges do. Yes, you have these educators that are there specifically for you to build your skill set. College is a skill set. You build a skill set. And if you're going there for esports, or you're going there for sports, you know, even more so. With esports, it is about connections. It is about how you know someone, who you know, and building stuff up with other individuals. It's all about collaboration. Again, esports is a community. That's what it is. And if you take part in that community, and I don't mean just like, oh, you know, I give money to esports, thus I'm part of this community. No, you got to be like the mom and pop shop type of situation where you're part of it. You come to the games, you take part, you know the students, you know the players, you know the teachers, stuff like that. Because even for high schoolers, I talk to them all the time. Whenever I'm talking to them, when I go visit them, I'm like, look, I can teach you everything I can teach you. But if you don't, and the other side is, if you don't take this initiative to make those connections, keep those connections, grow that connections, grow your own little community, you're not going to go anywhere. You can say, oh, you want to go pro all you want. You can grind as much as you want. You're not going to get anywhere if that's all you're doing. That is why you need to be well-rounded and take a holistic approach of things. Why you need to have your hats have to be, you have to have be of many.
Right.
You have to dip your toe in everything. You got to have several hats going on into this.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you just kind of answered what my next question was going to be. Advice for high school players who are looking to participate in esports at the collegiate level. You know, you've got to be not only, I would say, not necessarily be knowledgeable in those things, but at least be willing to at the same time, too. Because you may have a kid that has only played. All he's been is a competitor. But, you know, when he's coming into a collegiate program, I know trying to run a collegiate program with a staff of one, being myself, you lean on other people, and all of these high school coaches, that it's the same thing. A lot of them are staffs of one, and so they are running literally everything. So if you ever get a student come in that's willing to do casting, willing to do stream production, managing the social media, build out the graphics that they get put out on social media for promotion, that's really, really huge.
I was going to say, let me add on to that. I think I don't, so, you know, I'm comparing, I don't, I, there's only a few coaches that I've met. Pretty much everyone that I've met seems a little in the similar vein of like how hands-on they are. But to kind of hit this point and to add on to what you said, you do need those students that are like, hey, can I do this? Can I just do social media? Can I run this thing? Like, I want to be down. Let them do it. Just let them do it. I understand that there's this fear of like, you got to represent the brand and do it right. Cool. Set those expectations for them. Give them those guidelines. Give them that little sandbox to play in. But let them build the sandcastles. Let them do what they want to do in there. And that's going to give them, like, nurture those kids for everything. Nurture them. They're, just to give an example, there are two students that I've ran into. And these are what I'd consider my spectrums. One, I was talking to this one student. They weren't sure whether they want to do education or they want to focus on esports. They're a good player. And then I was like, well, why are you saying yes, one or the other? Why don't you do both? And if you want to go here, then you can still do both. You just got to be able to hear all these discords that I sent. And I was like, do this, this, and this, check this out, boom, boom, boom. And then immediately they were like, oh. And I was like, sorry, like, I didn't mean to overwhelm you. This is the life. This is, if you really want to do this, these are all the communities that are established. This is what you want to get into. Go there. Other side, this one particular student, I didn't say anything to him. I just said, hey, like, you know, we've met. Do you know anybody else that might be interested in it? They sent me 20 people. And then they also started just kind of bringing all the students that are within the Discord that I have, they just started bringing them together and being like, hey, I'm trying to build this kind of team. Are you interested? Are you like, they just started doing it. That to me is, that's the spectrum. Like, that's somebody who's going to go far because they just have that natural drive in them. And if you find students like that, coaches, nurture them entirely. Give them the world. To the ones that are more easily overwhelmed, I guess would probably be the best way to put it. Give them patience. Break it down for them, because they're looking at esports as a whole. Let them see it in increments. Say, hey, start with this. That's all I need you to do. Start here. Go in this Discord. Send a message. Baby steps. For the others, give them the world.
For sure. I have a listener question for you. And then I know Lucas has he's got quite the banger of a question. So I'm going to let him say his. okay. I really like it. I think it's great. But we do have a listener question from Mr. Hernandez Teaches. I'm a little disappointed that he didn't troll us this week with his questions. Last week.
I'm not.
Last week he trolled me in when we were interviewing Gavin Lee from Gwoop, and he gave me like four questions, but they were numbered all weird and all sorts of stuff. Some a few of the questions weren't even relevant at all, and I censored some of this, like I actually just excluded them. So I guess he's given up. Maybe I broke him. So he's only giving serious questions now, but he is asking, what are the best ways to be noticed by college recruiters? Three-prong question, are highlight clips still effective? And third, I know we talked about this, how do you like the play versus integration for college scouting?
Last one, I'll hold off on that last one for a hot second. So the best way, this kind of divides one of the other questions that I know we kind of talked about, like the challenges of Scholastic Esports right now. To first answer how to get noticed, the way that you would get noticed by a college recruiter is very similar to the way you get noticed by a professional organization, minus that professional organizations don't care about your grades. College recruiters just kind of narrow down to look at two things, grades and your competitiveness. And so if you have good grades, grades that match what the school's looking for, boom, you're in. Competitive wise, that's going to come down to the coach, kind of what team they're building. In an overall general sense, prove that you're adaptable, prove that you're versatile. So highlight clips are fine for like a quick, hey, here's a highlight of stuff that I do. But to be honest with every student that sent me them, I'm like, I don't need your highlights. I need to see a full game of how you actually play. I want to see you fail. I want to see what it looks like when you get like destroyed. Do you tilt easily? What do you do when you tilt? Do you support your teammates? Like, how do you bring, are you a conflict are you someone who knows conflict resolution just kind of naturally? And these are, so what I do is I'll play with these students a little bit for like a few hours, a couple of times to kind of get a feel for how they play, see what I would think from a teammate perspective. Do I trust this player? Like, do I feel like they're holding their own weight? What would I want more from them? And then have a discussion with them afterwards. So short answer to all that, to kind of organize it, it's the grades to get better, better grades, you know, more college is going to accept you. Be versatile within your game, or be really good at one specific thing. If you are a tank main, then be a really, really good tank main and show that you can be versatile in that range. Can you be a passive tank? Can you be an aggressive tank? Can you off tank? You know, how well are you in that mode? Can you lead? Like, how do you operate? Can you communicate? All these different things. Basically, it's the, if I'm telling younger students, I'm going to say, don't look at college recruiters as like, okay, these people are going to lead me and do that. Treat it as if you are the one looking for teammates. Mm-hmm. What kind of teammate would you want? And then be that teammate. Because that's who you're going to work with. When I talk to students, they're like, I tell them like, what kind of teammate? Like, you've worked with, you've played pub stomps, you've done ranked. Tell me a bad team versus a good team. And so when they tell me the good team, I'm like, can you do that? Are you that kind of player? Because we're going to play and I'll know if you're not. Like, I've been here. It's fine. But if they're, again, this comes back to if they're willing to work on it, then yeah, that's what they can do. The other way is that reach out to coaches. Again, get in, feel free to email people. And for me, when I was starting, I was getting emails and I was like, ooh, like, who's this? Like, I'm looking for, we're looking for players, regardless of your rank. Your rank doesn't matter because you can always get better. Mm-hmm. But reach out to coach and say, hey, I'm interested in your school. I want to have a chat and learn more about it. Because that's what we're doing. It's not as if we're this end all be all situation. Like, I still have to reach out to students and say, hey, I'm trying to sell my program to you. And you're trying to sell yourself to me. So we're both trying to sell each other something. Mm-hmm. It's
So while we're on that topic, if they wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So through
contact info.
Yeah. I can throw it in the actual chat. Okay. But so my Twitter handle is thelulumeister. I have my email, lmvera@loino.edu, and then Discord, which is lulumeister, no caps anywhere, #7779. Like, I'll type that out in the chat as well. And the touching a little bit on I totally just lost my train of thought in that like half second.
I can help you out. All right. We mentioned like highlight clips. So, Mr. Hernandez was talking about that. And you mentioned, you know, putting some of that stuff together, gameplay with comms, definitely. We're going to see like a holistic picture of everything. Mm-hmm. Are there any other? I know you don't use the play versus scouting tool like you and I talked before we went live earlier,
right.
About that. What other resources? Where would you direct students? You know, if they kind of wanted to explore and try to get themselves out there, because there are some resources. You know, Stay Plugged In is being referenced in the chat. I think the guys at Spin are doing some really good things. So do you have any resources like that you would kind of direct them to?
There is a, let me find it. There is a Twitter post that it's part of Stay Plugged In. I also, don't want them to be like that end all be all. They are a good place to start, I think, okay, these schools are having, they one, have esports programs, two, they have scholarships. So that's a good place to start. And then looking at any collegiate leagues, NACE being one of them, was ECAC?
Being ECAC, another.
Checking if your schools, the school, because every student has maybe top three schools they want to go to. See if they have esports groups, see if they have esports teams already. And if you still want to go there, see if you can make it. Because you can create your own program and then build your reputation doing that. And then that's going to get you way farther than, being pro will, because you just started a program and you essentially are a CEO of a business. As far as the other kind of downside to this, there's also a lot. It's very overwhelming in the scholastic space. And to slightly hit on the play versus stuff without, going too hard on it. we don't use it. It's not something I use, and it's not something I plan on using. It's not, I'm not a fan of it, to be honest. Just the way that it runs. I'm not a fan of the gatekeeping that it's done. Because again, my philosophy is esports is a community, will always be a community. It needs to be a community. You can have a product, you can have a game, but if you don't have the community behind it, it's a dead game. It's a dead product. That's right. Just how business is. If you don't have what the people want, then why use are you? Which kind of, which kind of hits back to the problem I feel like is the biggest challenge in scholastic esports is that because esports is new. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. Because esports being in mainstream is new. A lot of people want to get into it. It's money. It's, it's what it gets into, and that's fine. However, you got to go back to the basics of what you're building is that community. And just like as a teacher, the resources you reach out to for your teaching, for your discipline, for what you're doing, if it's not good enough, you got to provide to make sure that it's worth it for the community that you're building. And the problem is that in scholastic esports, and kind of esports in general, but more scholastic because there's a lot more red tape to work with, everyone's trying to do a very simple thing, which is, I just want to play games and prove other people that I'm good. That's all I want. I just want tournaments and be able to rank myself. Just two main things. However, everybody keeps trying to make this, reinvent the wheel, doing adding all these different things. And it's like, I don't need any of that. I just want to be able to compete with the people I want to compete with and be able to set up tournaments very easily and put my name out there. That's what it's for. And everyone's doing their own thing and saying that their way is the way. And that's the problem. It's not. It's never going to be. That's not how esports works. That's how it will never work. There's not one way to do this. It's kind of the beauty, and it's kind of the double-edged sword, I would say. And that's why it's versatile, sometimes a little too versatile.
Yeah, the collegiate scene, I mean, it was just, it was the Wild West. We didn't have issues in the collegiate scene with exclusivity like the high school scene does. That's a hot topic right now that we're not going to dive into. But you mentioned esports and its relative newness, I would say. You know, it's definitely a mainstream, and compared to like traditional athletics, you know, football, volleyball, you know, softball, they seem to have everything figured out. Esports is running into, now that it's as mainstream as it is, it's finding some unique problems. And that was something that Lucas wanted to ask about and get your thoughts on. So Lucas, I'm gonna let you take this one away.
Yeah, of course. So esports is so interesting to me, especially as we start getting into this, because, and this kind of ties into my earlier question too, when I was asking you about what do you do when you have kids who want to transition to pro play after only being with you for a little while. You know, the NCAA has really clear guidelines on this for traditional sports, right? For baseball, you can declare when you graduate, but other than that, you have to wait until you're 21. And so you either play for your college until you're ready to declare, or until you are allowed to declare, or you stop playing. Like, that's really your only options here. And so esports doesn't really have that going for us yet. So that's a good thing and a bad thing in some cases.
I don't know if I want that to change, because you can't own, like, developers own the game. You can't own esports.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone owns baseball. I don't think that's how that works, but.
Yeah. So similarly, they also have rules around who is allowed to compete. Like, when are you ineligible to compete? And so I know a hot topic that I've seen often, especially in the Call of Duty scene, but the most high profile example is probably with League of Legends. How do you feel about colleges allowing or even going out and potentially recruiting former pro players who are potentially no longer traditional college students, are definitely not amateurs, but are maybe stepping down from that scene and coming down to the collegiate scene?
Oof.
Yeah, I told you it was a banger.
So while you think about it, if you want to, for viewers who may not be aware, if you watch League of Legends, Niles is a great example of this. He played for Maryville for, I don't know how long. I think it was maybe only a year. Then was picked up through Proving Grounds on a contract through Golden Guardians. Transitioned to play for Golden Guardians for a split. Didn't go particularly well. And then after hovering around in Academy for a little while, he went back and is now playing at Maryville again.
So I guess this depends on intent here, because I could see the downside being, yeah, this college went out of its way to go hire, to bring in this pro, and completely muddies the competitive, what's the word? The competitiveness of the collegiate scene, because now you have this pro that basically just dominates everything. So it's no longer a competition. It's just, the worst case is like, it's just almost abuse at that point. It's bullying. However, if a person wants to come back to college, like, and there's an esports club, yeah, let them do it. There's no problem with that. It becomes an issue if recruit, like, collegiate recruiters are the ones specifically going to them and being like, okay, hey, I want you specifically to be part of my team, thus making me the best team in the scene. But if that wasn't the case, and somebody like, if Niles came to Loyola and be like, hey, like, I want to go back to college and I really like your school. I also saw the Chimney Esports group. Can I join that? I'd be like, yeah. What's your GPA? Like, I don't think, inherently, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I can see how it gets muddied. But if a pro player wants to go back to college, then let him go back to college. I think the other side of that too is that, one, it just, in a way, says, all right, you have this, you know, large fish in the ocean. Everyone has to get better now. Your standards are higher, which honestly, I think should kind of be the case to begin with. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be a reason as to why, like, if I compare pro play to collegiate play, completely different levels. There's no reason why collegiate play shouldn't be at that same level. And if it's at that same level, there's no problem. Basically, the issue is the pro is better than all the college kids because it's not being taken to the same seriousness as pro is, as pro level is. So maybe a solution to that, to help that situation, is to really hit home like how actually serious this can be. Because I mean, you have teams that are much more competitive than others already, and there's no issue there. It's clear that there are some schools that are just like way above others. No issue there. That's no different. Okay. There's a pretty thick line is the difference there, but at the same, in a certain way, it's not too different. It basically says that you just got to up the level of players, mm-hmm. meaning there has to be more resources for coaches to provide for these students so that they can play at a higher level. There's got to be ways for them to practice at a higher level. Already, I know that organizations are working with schools to be coaching so that they can coach them specifically to be ready for pro play. So that,
yeah, I think it's tough. Like you said, there are
ways to solve the problem. Yeah. It's not bringing a pro in isn't an issue if it's like, yeah, this person wants to come back to college. Like, what am I supposed to tell? Like, if I met Niles, I'd be like, nah, don't, no, you're not allowed back in college. Cause now you want to come back. You already finished. It's like, no, just let them do their thing.
Yeah, I mean, and you, like I said, esports is in this interesting space, and we have it in chat too. I mean, you could legit have semi-pro or even, you know, amateur high school kids competing for an organization, you know, on a team, but then yet they're also playing on high school teams. You know? Yep. And unfortunately, there's nothing really to stop that. And do you? Want to? Should we? I mean, it's you. I think it's kind of silly to go back. Well, it's not fair. Well,
So here's the thing. I don't think we should, because that's what makes esports. It's online. It's a possibility to be online. It's a little more freeing. It's not. I don't think it would be wise to, at least in that way, to start putting red tape. Because then we have the situation with using kind of the likeness of students in sports, kind of what's going on with the NCAA. Then we have that issue. Like, again, there really isn't any, if a pro player is still in high school, what's the high school gonna do? Get out? Like, legally, they still have to go to school. And I guess you can argue, well, they're not an adult, so maybe what the pro league can do is like, all right, well, wait till you're 18. Cool. Done. Like, that solves that issue. There are ways around it. I don't think using the reasoning of, like, it's not fair that they have a pro player. Sorry, get good. I don't know what I need to tell you.
Well, I think it does muddy it a little bit when you start looking at this kid's making money. He's getting money to play for an organization. But yet he's also playing at the high school. It's kind of but it's just so different because we don't have Major League Baseball players at 17 years old also playing on their high school baseball team.
Correct. Yeah. And there, I think, are there age restrictions when it comes to traditional sports?
Lucas could probably tell you more than I could.
Can you repeat that real quick?
Are there age restrictions when it comes to if somebody wants to play in the pro, like a pro traditional sport?
I don't think so. Let me think. I know that there are rules around when you're allowed to be drafted. Mm-hmm. For example, like football, you're not allowed until you have competed for 2 years in your traditional sport, right? Like you can, or 3 years, right? You can declare at the end of your junior year, at the end of your senior year, and you can go. But like you can't go as a high schooler straight into it. Baseball, you can, I already mentioned it, but you can declare for the draft when you graduate high school, but if you don't declare then, you can't declare until the end of, until you're 21. Trying to think of, I don't know what basketball is. I don't follow basketball close enough.
I think, yeah, because I remember, I think like Kobe Bryant was drafted straight out of high school, yeah. If I remember correctly, you know, and because I remember my students would grab on to that and be like, see, mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. I can go pro right out of high school.
Yeah.
Like, listen, yeah, the 0.001%. So I think they've tweaked their rules a little bit.
Yeah. But I know the majority of the conversation there is around the amateur aspect, right? Like college wants to stay for amateurs in traditional sports. Mm-hmm. So if you play, I want to say that if you play minor league baseball, if you declare at 17 after you graduate or 18 after you graduate, whenever, how old you are, you get signed to a contract and you get paid to play. If you go back to college later on because you wash out of the minor leagues, you can't compete for your college team.
So essentially what traditional sports, I guess, to solve the solution in a way, kind of like we made a minor league and a major league, you know, you have different mm-hmm. leagues what they can play in. And so what you could do is, you know, that's why teams have academy teams. They have, you know, they don't have the pro teams. They have people that are, you know, more amateur. But yeah, if you take away the aspect of like, this is competitiveness, literally all you're doing is you're saying, hey, you're in high school, you can't start getting a job. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it is. If it's the money that's an issue, then I'm going to just rephrase the question. Cool. Okay. Then can they work at a Walmart? Is that okay with you? Like, can they make money? Is that your problem? And if that's the problem, then we're just kind of opening a different can of worms here. And we're just kind of having a whole different conversation. But if the problem that somebody's having is like, oh, it ruins the competitive integrity. It's like, no, it doesn't. This kid just got real good and is in high school, just so happens to be in high school and got drafted because he's real or they're really good. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's like saying, it's basically like saying, I know there's a teacher in here that has SSL level Rocket League players.
Right.
What am I supposed to tell her? Sorry, because you have SSL. No, you can't compete with our golds over here because you're too good. Like, it doesn't make sense. There are solutions that you can do. You can say, okay, if you're at this level, then we can create a league for you specifically for, you know, that high. You know, maybe diamond grandmaster up, so to speak. That's a solution. I don't think the solution would be taking away their ability to go pro, because that's the beauty of what this is. You know, show off yourself, and it's, if they want to do content creation, it's kind of a similar thing. Like, they're going to start doing it at a younger age. There's YouTubers who are like 16, 17. Mm-hmm. You know, I think on that end, that comes also to the other side of as adults to talk to them about like, hey, this is what the internet's like. You got to be ready for this. And this is what it's going to be like. You know, I think that's kind of the thing I sometimes tell parents of like, if you're worried about that, you got to learn the internet, man.
in that same conversation when we talked about the player that was playing pro and now he's going back to collegiate, we're even seeing some collegiate teams in Proving Grounds, which is the amateur tournament. Yes. So Maryville actually has two teams in the in Riot's, I guess, amateur tournament. Now I don't think that the what do they get if they win Proving Grounds?
For winning Proving Grounds, let me think.
But they're competing against other professional, like old pros that are on like amateur teams now.
Yeah, well, and I know that there was a huge deal. Like Maryville, like, made a big production out of it when they beat 100 Thieves Academy, mm-hmm. Because it was huge, right? Like, they're a college team and they just beat a pro team, second team. Like, that's nuts. Yeah. But I do believe so. For 2022 spring, there is a cash prize. First place is $30,000. Second place is $20,000. Third place is $15,000, and fourth place is $10,000.
Wow.
Someone's asking the question in chat.
This is a good question. Yeah. And this is, go ahead.
The question is thinking about, like actually signing and being paid for competing. So that comes down to your signing a contract. That if bare bones, that's what I'm looking at when I see that question. Are you okay? Like, is a student able to sign a contract of that level of what it is? The question is, does that contract affect their day-to-day school life? As in, is it going to prevent them from being a student? Because in that aspect, all it means is that if it wasn't the contract portion, all that would mean is that they're just getting more resources. They got better coaches, better teammates, more opportunities to compete at higher levels. So I think that kind of comes down to, like, that is kind of a weird area, because it is more of a, I mean, we look at it because they're young, right? Like, that's the whole thing. And so maybe instead of having them be okay with signing things and being part of an org immediately, I think you kind of, I look at OWL and see what they did. Their requirement was 18. Mm-hmm. I think maybe you just put an age limit and say, hey, like, if you are going to sign this, you need to be of age. That was our ruling for Crescent, because I didn't want to have to deal with minors.
Yeah, I think it's weird too, because esports doesn't, there's not this broad across the board understanding of what the leagues really are. Like, what is the distinction between a scholastic league and an esports org? And like, can we like get some of that in like on paper somewhere? Because like, even in disc golf, like Luke's and I play disc golf. If you cash playing in open, if you step up to play pro and you cash and you make money, you cannot step back down and play in a lower division. You can't do it. So even in disc golf is still, you know, not as, which is less, I would say it's probably less mainstream than esports. Mm-hmm. You know, it has those rules. And so I think it is an avenue worth exploring. So, you know, if you do have this kid that's in high school, that, because orgs will sign it with General Sniper. He's with 100 Thieves, I believe he is.
Yes.
And he was like 14 or something like that when they originally tried, or Cloud9 tried to sign him or something like that. And then they signed him too young. And then they came in and said, no, sorry, you can't do that. So they had to release him after they already put out the promotional graphics that they signed the kid. And then 100 Thieves Academy or whoever picked him up. So it's it's interesting, because we don't have that yet.
I think in that aspect, like, again, there's not, because in esports, it's not really, no one really dictates ruling except for leagues. You know, the leagues for us is like, for NACE specifically, is like, you just have to be part of the school. You got to be part of a NACE school to compete in NACE. Cool. You know,
and you can be an online student.
You can be an online student. Now, the thing is, like, but here's the other side too, because so Maryville's playing both sides here. To use an example, they have a pro that went to them, but they're also playing in the pro leagues. Also, Loyola, because we're not limited to NACE, I have no problem going into a pro league. I would rather prefer it, because then that gets their name out there to actual, kind of sounds weird, to actual leagues that matter. Like, that's kind of what we need to build up to, is that the leagues in the collegiate scene, the leagues in the high school leagues, need to matter on the grander scale. It's cool to hear, you know, as a coach now, being part of the collegiate scene, when I'm talking to teachers and coaches and they're like, yeah, like, we won state and we have the number one players in the state. We have these top players. I'm like, great, that's awesome. But then in the back of my mind as well, it's like, okay, but can they upkeep that? Like, they're good now. Can they do it? And the question is to them, if they're already that good, should they just skip ahead of the line and go straight to a pro? You know, what's best for them? But it's not, I think inherently with the question of like, can a pro go back to college? Yeah, that's kind of what you're asking. Can a pro go back to college? Mm-hmm. And if it's the worry of, does it mess with the integrity of the league or of the competition? then maybe the league has to make a ruling of like, okay, like if you are this caliber of player, then you have to play in the upper leagues. That's kind of like, so let me use Counter-Strike as an example, because they did this with their something called Cal League, and they even do it with ESEA. They have open, so I'm going to go based on the old one because I don't actually know ESEA entirely. They had open, intermediate, main, invite, and then professional. So you moved up the ranks in your own in this league to then prove yourself. So that's solution, or a solution. I don't say if it's a solution, but maybe that's a solution to have, like, okay, we have these teams in, you know, college league A or high school league A, and they're open. They're part of the open league. Cool. They've done better. They've been winning. They won open league. Cool. They go to intermediate. Boom. They move to main. Boom. They move to invite. Boom. They go up and up and up. I think that having a ladder within the league is going to be a solution, because right now you don't. Everyone just competes against everybody. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be, if this is happening and people are concerned about it, then you can create a subdivision. You can create a division within the league to help this situation out. Thus, for me, I know that has a really cool... That's another way to track your stats, because if I went to, I got all the way to M with my team. So that's like right a little before semi-pro. And I was talking to people, yeah, I was like Cal M, and they'll be like, oh, okay. Like it perked their ears. It's kind of be a similar way to also manage recruiters or to help with recruiters. Oh, this team is just, let's use Nace. Nace M or Nace I, and that's like, cool. Oh man, these are top level teams. These are top level players. They're all playing against each other. So,
okay, can I? In order for that to happen,
yeah,
you would. this is going to cause some problems. In order for that to happen, would you need to have a centralized league that everybody competes in?
So
Lucas sees where I'm going with this.
Hold on. You okay.
In order to track it. All right. So for example, if I'm competing in this, you know, my local league or this grassroots league that was started by a guy I know, like, yeah, I'm in this level in that particular league. But yeah. Does that draw direct correlation to a more national league at that same level? You know what I mean? So if we're going to try to compare players across the entire country or across the globe to try to track them to see at what level do they actually compete at, how do you do that with esports being as splintered as it is as far as tournament organizers and leagues that are being run?
So using Counter-Strike again, there was another... These are community-ran. Like, these leagues, I think, were community-ran. I don't think there was a overarching person in there. So there's OGL. Mm-hmm. OGL was jokingly, like, the easy league. However, there was a comparison. You know, OGLO was a little lower than CalO. But OGLM was probably at the level of CalIM. So there was... It wasn't, like, an official, this is what this means. But... That's kind of what it was well known amongst the community of like, oh, okay, you're at this level. Okay, I can compare you to this. Cool, mm-hmm. Perfect. That works. So it's been done. The problem doing it here is that everyone's trying to do it themselves to say like, we're the league that you have to join. You know, we have right. all that. Da, da, da. And it's like, no. And that's the problem is that the people making these leagues aren't giving what the community actually needs. They're not sitting down and having a conversation with teachers, coaches, the schools and saying, hey, like, what is working for you guys? What are you guys running into? What issues are you running into? How can we help you? What can we do for you? Mm-hmm. And just bringing that all together. Because would you want to have a centralized league? You can. Most likely there's going to at some point be a league that's just going to be recognized as the league. you know, with traditional sports, you kind of have that with NAIA versus NCAA. Like you have the, it works. Like there's other leagues, but nobody really talks about them.
Well, that's slowly happening with just kind of naturally as different leagues and tournament organizations and organizers kind of come into their own as the popular leagues. Mm-hmm. I mean, League of Legends has forced theirs with CLOL, right? Like other groups run theirs, but I mean, CLOL is the best, and also Riot runs it. So it's like,
it's the one you'd want.
But a better example of that would be, I keep bringing up Call of Duty, even though I have zero experience playing or competing in Call of Duty. But CCL is like the big college esports platform, not because they have exclusivity, but because they're the best. So if you go and you look at the college COD events on, or anything like this on COD Esports Fandom, their like list of tournaments or anything like that. Like when you look up college COD and you look up all these teams that are competing in college COD with their really good teams, it's all, you know, the CCL league, just because they're the good ones. There's no exclusivity. Right. It's just they're recognized as the best league right now. So,
yeah. Well, the crazy thing with that too is the publishers do not support that competitive scene hardly at all.
Right.
Yeah. And when we competed in Call of Duty, it was the most difficult experience of doing any other esport. I had to reach out to some friends of mine, be like, listen, I need some help with this, because there are so many gentlemen's agreements in Call of Duty where the publisher doesn't patch the game enough and tweak like damage values that the community comes together and handshakes on nobody's going to run this particular setup. You can't run this gun.
Oh,
you can't
run this
kill streak. you can't do any of that stuff. And if your program does, and does it like willingly, then you get the community blackballs you, and you know that you don't get scrims, all that kind of, you get smeared on social media, all that kind of stuff. So it's that's an interesting example of, you know, the community taking it and running it. You have this external organization that's going to pick up the helm and run with it, but the publisher's like, yeah, we're kind of hands off. We don't care what you do with it, because we're just going to release more content for you to buy.
Right. I think there definitely needs to be a balance. Like, you can't just have hands off, let them do what they want to do, because then you do have issues like this where it's like a gentleman's agreement of like, yeah, we're just not going to use this. Then somebody runs it. Like, to use Counter-Strike, we did the same thing. There's an item in the game. It's a shield. Everyone agreed, don't use it. It's illegal. Community agreed it's illegal. I think the league at some point, finally, after a while, said, okay, it's illegal to use in our league. But nonetheless, in the very beginning, it's like, nope, we're not all using it. Of course, we ran into a couple teams that did. But it, like, when it's coming from the community, it's running with the community. Ideally, that's best, because the community knows what the game actually, like the competitive scene actually desires, and how to build to that. Does the community have the best business people? Not all the time. It's ideally, the best part about it is that they know what the game, what the competitive people crave, they know what the players desire, and they also know what the pro level looks like, because they're in it. That's part of it. And that separates the leagues, these scholastic leagues, from these leagues that actually matter, like CLOL. You know, it is developer ran, but nonetheless, they know what their game, their audience wants. They're doing it, and they change accordingly. CCL community knows what it wants, and developers like, cool, you guys got it. Less work for us. We need the Scholastic Esports needs to have people who are from the community build something for the community, and make something that makes sense, that follows similar rulings, if not the same, as pro league. And I say similar because we're dealing with younger students, so there might be a couple of things that we got to change. And so that's kind of what worked in my eyes. Like, this is me coming in from it firsthand experience from the player side of things. You know, growing up, there wasn't esports in any of the schools that I was in, but nonetheless, I was still doing the same thing, that I was going to high school, but I was also winning money on the side. Like, my situation is no different than what it is now, except now esports has more of a lens on it. But the league that we ran in worked best. It was agreed upon as the league that we all liked. And that needs to happen here. It's going to at some point. People are just going to agree, yeah, we'll just kind of follow this. But the issue is control. It's all these places are being like, we need to control this. We got to think of the children.
There's a lot of money to be made in esports right now. And there are a lot of organizations that are taking advantage of that opportunity. And basically any chance they can get, it's, you know, how can we profit off of this? How can we make money? And it's very, I guess it's different from something like the NCAA, which mm-hmm. like the NCAA isn't going to, or the AHSAA, or, you know, your state athletic association isn't going into the schools and asking the kids for, you know, like, hey, pay your state athletic association, and things like that. But when you look at things like with in esports, with all these other leagues, it's pay to play, you know, mm-hmm. and you've got to invest in us for our product in order for you to compete. Whereas in any other sport, traditional sport, you're a student at that school. You try out, you make the team, and you play. So it's, and with all these other, all the leagues having different rule sets and things like, it's just so splintered and so fractured that I'm wondering if that is some of the things that's keeping it from breaking through to that next level, you know?
So I would say it is, but at some point it's going to break through. Because here's the thing, and this has been proven time and time again with esports. You can't throw money at this. You can't. Gamers are extremely skeptical people. They now get a little more preachy here than I have been.
All right, we're going to finish up with your sermon. Send us home. Give us the sermon.
We've been fighting for this for a very long time. Gamers have been trying to make gaming mainstream and trying to been taken seriously for the various long time. And I'm going to die on this one particular hill because this is, even language takes our side. Esports is no longer E-sports, E capital S sports. Don't spell it that way. It's a proper word, as in if it's in the front of a sentence, it's capital E sports. It's just a word. Now the it's because we've been fighting for this for so long, we've been having to fight with our parents. Mom, I'm a gamer, like I want to do this. People make money off this. I know what I'm doing, like I know how to do this because of this. I've learned this because of this. And even now parents are still being like, video games, why? You know, students are still doing that as well. And I'm sure teachers have I know some teachers have started to do it with the parents and the deans of, yes, esports is a very important thing. It's a growing thing. It's a thing that helps people become better individuals. It gives them skill sets. It gives them all these different things. Yes, they play video games, but are you really doing anything? Or like, what's the difference between you paying someone to go chase a ball? Like, thanks. It's less physically demanding, but extremely mentally demanding. And you can't deny the work that they put in for both. Now, with this whole thing, that being said, with these leagues coming in, they want to make money. They come in here and they're like, yeah, you got to pay us to play the game that you're already playing. And so that you can do the thing you want to do, which is, oh, I want to track my stats and compete against my friends and like see if I'm better than them, if my school's better than that school. So you're saying I have to pay you for that? But I was already doing that. Why do I need you? And that's the thing. That's that last question. Why do I need you? I don't need you. The only thing right now that I feel is, I don't even say needed. It is needed. The only thing that's very important to maybe what these leagues do is they give access to players. Because colleges right now don't know how to pool esports players. It's not like traditional sports where I can go to, you know, hey, this is a really good high school for basketball, soccer, whatever. They don't know how to do that. And it's hard to do that, especially because it's online. At some point that's going to change to where you're going to say, okay, I know certain areas. Like, well, I know that because I'm in the scene. I could be like, yeah, I'm going to go to California if I want better players, because there's a couple of areas that I know are really, really good. I can go to New York. I can go to Florida. I can go to Seattle. But you can't do that with schools. and it's harder to recruit that way. So you need something that brings them all together. Hence, these leagues coming together and yes, and being like, yes, we have this data for you. We can, you can pull this so that you can recruit these students and pull these into your, into your classrooms. But if that's all you provide, then cool. Thanks for the data. Bye. I don't need you anymore. You have the leagues. So a league needs to still be there to provide that one service that they can all compete, that everyone's happy with how it's working. And it works in tandem with the future. If your league, just to give an example, PlayVersus has Mario Kart. Doesn't work for me in college. That's not something that goes into the pro scene. Well, I don't need it. It's fun, sure, but it's not something that's ever going to really be used. There are fun side tournaments for Mario Kart, but it's not like there's a, you know, riots running Mario Kart.
the collegiate Mario Kart Invitational.
You know. And so that's kind of the thing. Like, what do you tell those students? Like, what do you do? What do you do in that situation? What do you do if your league means nothing later on? If what you're doing, the rules you're setting, mean nothing. So in the case of, like, you know, if you have rules that are different than a pro league, then a student's going to get used to a one way of playing, realizing that what they were doing meant nothing because they're going to be trying to learning something else. So a lot of stuff needs to be built. There needs to be a pipeline that goes initially all the way from the beginning to pro. Now, for this to be successful, pros have to be organized as well. It's Wild West. We've gone over this. Wild West is going to stay that way for a little while. It's slowly becoming more organized, but we can come together here in the Scholastic space because we all agree on one thing. We want these students to succeed. We already have a pipeline when it goes from K through 12 to higher education. We know how that works. Education-wise, we know how that works with traditional sports. Yes, esports is different, but it also follows a similar pipeline. If we can all agree and come together on similar ideas of what we want these students to have, what ask the right questions, see the right, like find the right results we want them to go, and ask, do they need this later on? Mathematicians get asked this all the time. Do I need math? Am I going to need this? Same thing. Am I going to need this in high school? Am I going to need this in pro league if I'm doing this? And if not, then we got to change it elsewhere.
All right. Amen.
Amen.
Lucas, you got any final thoughts there before we go?
No, I just wanted to say thank you to Lumen for joining us. This was an absolute blast and a very fun way to kick off our college director. Guess.
Yeah, thanks for letting me preach and on the podium for a hot minute.
That's right. If we've got any coaches out there or any players that are interested in contacting Lumen and asking a little bit more about his program over there at Loyola University, check him out Twitter at the Lulumeister. You can email him at lmvera@loyno.edu. That's loyno.edu. Or hit him up on Discord at Lulumeister. It's pound.
Language changes. You got to just adapt the new
Lulumeister pound 7779. It's just going to be pound for me. But that is going to do it for us. Rift Happens season 2, episode 11. Lucas, thank you so much for being here. Lumen, thank you so much for being our special guest. We will catch you all next time.